introduced, I have traveled far. I actually work here at Leatherhead, and in a very interesting position. Another work with a lot of the people in the food industry that are actually trying to scratch that very narrow slide that you've seen in the previous presentation on F-claims, and not specifically just for food, but a generality F-claim the food products make, and actually generate the science that is actually now required to substantiate health claim. So what I really want to talk to you about today is a little bit giving you an overview of where we are in this situation. Why are we so interested in this functional market in general, and obviously in particular in targeting sport products and this other category of energy products, and where the boundaries are now, or where these products are positioning themselves. I want to look at the products and the clients themselves very briefly. But also something that I always find very intriguing, and that is actually part of the regulation, is the consumer understanding, because at the end of the day, they are the ones who are going to be buying the product. So why are we so going on about functional food in general? And these are some market intelligence data that I've got from some of my colleagues in market intelligence. And if you look at this, this is giving you a nice count of who are these people and how many people actually consume functional food because of their function. So we have 30% of people that actually consume some kind of functional product about every day, weekly. There is a small chunk of never. That we strongly believe these are the people that either because they believe they have a perfectly healthy diet or they don't believe in the claims that the product makes, that they are non-believer and they don't consume any of this product. So why is the industry carrying on? Why there is this all health claim regulations? When we look at the functional market by the health claim outcome, the first thing that you see is that these data are recent data actually from last year. In $1 billion, there is a very high sale, independent of which one would be the health claim. But it's not often related to which one is the problem that we relate the most, but often it's related to which one is the claim we understand the most, or we feel is going to have an impact on our health. And when you look at it, apart from the gut health, that again, for the regulation has got a bit of a hit lately, energy and mood is something in which consumers relate to. For a reason or another, in any age group, we have a feeling that we need extra energy or we need to have some cognitive and mood improvement that we can achieve through food. Certainly because it's a message that through caffeine in the morning, pretty much anybody has got an understanding of it. But there is a very interesting phenomenon that I've been seeing, and that is clearly putting products between this boundary between the sport drink, the energy drink, the sport people consume for hydration, for the energy, and then also that whole category of energy drink that you all might be familiar and identify with things like the Red Bull of this world. And actually when we look at the size of these products globally, we can see that actually the sport drinks themselves as such has got a much smaller cut of the cake than what all these energy drinks have. Now, my question is why? And what are these actually sport products? And why are we buying it? And what is happening within the market? These slides give you a very interesting piece of information on the cut between the sport and the energy drink that are sold at global level. And what are the kind of claims that, apart from the generic performance, has been added to it? And when you look into it, especially for the energy drink, there seems to be getting into a completely new market, a completely new arena of claim, there is the vitamins claim. So it's more of the healthy story. I mean, we associate with all energy drink to be needing a kick to get going. They're associated with a completely different market. But now actually we're looking at things more related to health benefit. The sport drink has always been more of a healthy product than the energy drink has actually ever been. And a lot of the other claims that this product might be making are quite interesting and surprising. But the point of why I wanted to show these slides, that what is clearly happening is that there is a new buyer of this product. It's no longer just the performer in the gym, and it's no longer just the younger student that is recovering from a hangover buying this energy drink. There's a very large category of people, including myself, that I'm most certainly a marathon runner, but when I look at the amount of things that I have to do during a day, I do feel that I need the extra energy. So what is the product today and out there for me? We are currently consuming a very large amount of this product. And they're very common, very widely spread, but obviously when you look at it, you can clearly see that it's the US that has got the biggest chunk of the sale of sport performance and energy drinks overall, for a variety of reasons. One's because the leading company are in the US, but also because I think in the market there's always been more prepared to this type of product, to the consumption of that kind of drink. And so clearly it's been leading compared to the European market, but it's a market that is certainly growing in Europe as well. So I want for you to look a little bit at this site, because of this reason that we're signed. We know when we identify the sports drinks, you know, the one in the power bottle from your Powerade and Glucoside and so forth, you're very familiar with it. But the image and the use of this product has always been associated with the gym and the performance use. And then we have all our energy drinks that we're familiar with in a can. It's a substitute or any cola or any large drink, and it's that energy kick that we're familiar with. A lot of these products are coming in the market, and they are absolutely everywhere in the US. But as I was saying to you, the ingredients are still the same, the performance we're referring to is still the same, but it's very much more targeted to us that we have to deal with a lot of things throughout the day and when our working day is finished. So some of these products actually give you 5 hours of constant energy. So there is a very new message. And especially in the US, there are now a new category of drinks, like the vitamins water, that are starting in Europe, in the UK in particular as well. And this is a new product because it's actually not your sports drink, but it still has the same energies and vitamin that one of these kind of electrolyte drinks will give you. And so there is a lot of bandwidth expansion. We heard this morning about the mastering. I think this is the refuel. It's a very interesting move from a product. You know, Mars bar is a chocolate bar, and now it's kind of moving towards more of the performance kind of, from a shape, from a bottle type. And where, of course, there are a variety of forms in which you can capture your energy. So the message is still the same. If it's sport, or it's for energy, or it's that extra energy that I need to get me go from my very busy day of work to my very busy evening at home, and then have that energy to actually go to the gym in between. But what are we seeing? Why is this happening? And I think this is a phenomenon that I find very interesting, and that I've come across. As we heard this morning again, we seem to be involved in more and more sport activity. But also we have a real trend of wanting to have a more healthy lifestyle. And so products that are really breaking into the market that I find very interesting is like the coconut water. Coconut water has actually filled that market really well. Has not become as popular mainly with consumer as yet, but it's clearly making a very good entrance, and it's proving almost like the biggest competitor. And why is that? It's because we have this real craving for something natural. We don't relate to, not all of us, we don't feel performance. We want the energy, we want the vitamin, we want the performance, but we want for something that we recognize as more natural. So all this coconut water has made their appearance, and the message that they come with is something that we can relate to, you know, that exactly the same potassium as a banana, and we take that message, it's a healthy claim, it's a good product for me, it's natural, and that's what we want. But we were talking about these ingredients and what are the ingredients out there. I don't want to talk about all the science behind all of them. We're all very familiar, we all know the effect of caffeine. But some ingredients are now making a real come through. And why is that? Now, what I want to talk to you about today is chia seeds. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, but that is a very interesting product. And I've got some data from Intel on the new products that have been launched containing chia seeds in the last decade to date. And you can see a real sharp increase in this product. They've been incorporated in snack, of course, because it's a seed and it's some drink. But why is that? Why all of a sudden is some product like coconut water, they become so popular? Now, this is a very interesting story, and I don't know how many of you are familiar with this book, but somebody mentioned it to me, and it's the book called Born to Run. But actually, the whole story is about running barefoot. But what is part of the story is that a number of miles that these small population in Africa can actually run without any hydration, without any of all the concepts for nutrition that we have. And they can actually run something like 100 miles. And all they take with them is this little bag of chia seeds. Now, what does tell to me is that A, marketing is a better tool than anything else, and B, it's actually what more scientific proof as a consumer do you get when you actually get the data for somebody that's actually done it and it's running and you can show that they can do that. So there is a clear interest from the consumer to be able to see that the scientific evidence behind the product actually can sell that product. So, where do we get from there? What can we learn? I mean, in sports nutrition, there is a very large knowledge on how to utilize ingredients and vitamins and minerals to actually deliver the functional product that you want, the functional food or drink. And it's a well-known phenomenon. You know, we all know about protein, and we do understand from a science basis what the carbohydrate role is. But when it comes to your average consumer and when it comes to our regular diet, carbohydrates in the last decade have really had a bad history. The Atkins diets have really not done any good to carbohydrate consumption. But the bottom line is, when we need energy, what our body is going to use is actually those glucose storage for the immediate energy. And that has put actually the industry into a position of understanding more how the release of this energy can be modulated through food. And this is where the sustained energy release has started becoming an interesting story. As an athlete, you need that quick energy and you need the sustained energy for your performance. As a normal person, you want that sustained energy for a variety of reasons. We want it because we want to be able to not have that dip on our energy. We want it because we need to carry on throughout the day. So things like glycemic index in the last decade were very popular in places like Australia, and much less in other parts of the country. But certainly consumer and people and products started talking about modulating the way the energy is released. And it's not just about the simple ingredients, but it's also through the formulation. Somebody this morning was asking about how do we regulate the insulin, you know, the role of amino acids to moderate the insulin release. So that content has been taken a lot by the food industry and trying to deliver and provide products that can do these sustained energy release throughout the day. So that concept of energy has made it into a complete new market. It's obviously the breakfast, the carbohydrate, slow energy release for breakfast, and products like the Vitae become a real example of this, where they have actually sustained energy release, and some of these claims, as in light of the regulation, have been turned down. But certainly things like oat products and so forth. Some of the products are actually specifically trying to target a population like children to provide a sustained energy. Because there is a variety of messages that come with that. It's not just related to the performance, both physical and mental, but also to your appetite control. That if you don't feel less tired, you have less craving for food. But then there is the health claim issue. And luckily, the speaker before me has given you a very good idea of what the regulation stands for. The problem is, a lot of products were making a lot of claims, and they were expanding everywhere. And that's where the European Food Authority has decided that we need an harmonisation across Europe. That is never an easy thing to do. But also, they wanted to ensure that the consumer were getting the correct science through the claim that they were making. Now, as you heard, there's been very high level of submission and very few claims that's gone through. That has been a lot due to the way the claims have been submitted. But for the sport product and any other claim product that want to make a specific claim, now the only route is this Article 13.5 that we were discussing, the proprietary claim, but which you have to be able to support whatever claim you have in the product. And you have to compile the correct scientific evidence with intervention study that will show that your product basically does what it says on the tin. So claims like we were discussing this morning on vitamins, they will apply to the vitamin effect, but if you want that same ingredient to provide a different claim, that is a proprietary claim. You have to be able to show me that that same ingredient in your specific product, in that specific population, can actually provide you with an activity. There is no regulation or guidelines on sustained energy release so far. But we have some guideline at this point for glucose claim. So for example, any claim for release of energy through glucose also have to prove that it's not linked to increased incidence of insulin. So you can't show that you're flattening the glucose curve because you're pumping insulin into the body. Your release has to be constant from the food. and for physical performance, there are clear guidelines. But now we have to start distinguishing for muscular repair, muscular fatigue, and glucose storage. So the science that you have to submit has to be very strongly linked with the wording of the claim, as we heard from our students this morning. But the bottom line is, what do the consumers make of this? I mean, we can sit here, we can discuss in the most minute details what is the metabolism of glucose and so forth. But the bottom line is, you've got to put a claim into your product that the average consumer has to understand. You have to provide the right science, and they have to basically buy it. They have to believe in your claim. So you need to provide scientific evidence, but how do we word it? So, as a scientist, I understand a variety of things, but I want to actually see what the average consumer think of that. So I'm lucky enough to have been able to pick on some of the technology that we have here at Leatherhead. So I asked my colleagues to let me use their SenseReach and do a quick survey on consumer in the UK and find out what they actually understand of sustained energy release. What I didn't, so we asked them very specific questions, we asked them to make some comments. What I didn't realise that within 48 hours, probably 1,000 people decided to fill in these things. So I ended up with an enormous amount of data to look through. But what we basically had is that, obviously, a dominant female-dominated respondent, that's often the case, but we also had a good distribution of age. So all these people, we went and asked them, first of all, how much exercise they did. And the interesting thing is that the majority of them, they were not super performers. There was only a smaller percentage that they were performing at least once a day. It's something that I find very fascinating. But majority of them are more like on the twice a week, most of the days. And of course, you still have those that either hardly ever go or never go. So there was a fairly good distribution between the amount of activity. So this was not your athlete performance, it was more your average person, as we might be in this room. So we wanted to ask them three specific questions. Do they understand sustained energy release? Do they understand the improved glucose control? Or what do they understand of improved physical performance or exercise performance? So the interesting thing is that the majority of them stated to have a good or moderate understanding of this claim. And the way we try to actually look and understand if that was true is asking them, so what do you think it means? And the majority of them, and only a minority of them, only said that they have a very poor understanding. But clearly, if you look through this data, what you can see is that sustained energy seems to be something that the majority of people are understanding, fairly better than improved glucose control. And when looking through the answer, we actually realize that that tends to be more associated with people with diabetes, and therefore they don't relate very much to that. And improved the physical and exercise performance, they understand it, and how they understand it, I've got a couple of slides for you. So when we ask them about sustained energy release, yes, I understand them. Many of them associate that with exercise. So they understood that what I did is that I went through all the answers. I stopped for the first few hundreds because I couldn't really go through the whole thousands. But that gave me a very good idea of what the majority of the answers were. And so many of them looked at low energy release. They had an expression like low GI. And they had comments like, blood sugar level don't spike or drop, that is fairly good. Many though were associating this with exercise. So they were associating sustained energy with replace energy following exercise. But also, that I thought was very interesting, more than a few people, they were actually making that link between the sustained energy release and keeping full for longer. So making that kind of link that even product I've been trying to make, in that if I feel energized, I will feel fuller, I will eat less. Then we asked them about glucose control. Again, the understanding was slightly lower. They understood that it had something to do with spikes within the blood. And many of them made the association with low glycemic index. But as I was saying, many people really got the two ends of the scale. Either they thought that was something not related to them because it had to do with diabetes, with the disease prevention, or some people completely didn't get it and thought it had something to do with limiting the amount of cakes they eat. So you do get this thing sometimes. And the last one that I wanted to find out about, so what do people think about physical performance? How do we think food can actually have a benefit to their physical performance? And many, they got it, and I guess this is, comes from the education, this comes from the food, from the sport food products. But very interesting I found, is that, okay, that improved my physical performance, but But also then people were making the association in making more of an effort doing exercise. So it's not just the recovery, it's not just the improving how much I can do, but actually in the short term of the exercise, be able to improve the stamina and making more effort doing exercise. So the other things that also came very clear, it's they understand that food can have an impact, but also that they are a bit suspicious of some of the claims that go into products. So once again, this need of substantiating the claims behind the product is coming more and more apparent to the consumers. So in conclusion, what I really wanted to highlight here is that there is really a new market here that goes from the sport athlete performers to anyone of us that sit on a desk for the majority of our time. And what it is that we now want to buy more of a lifestyle product, somebody that drags us to the gym, not necessarily something that's going to improve our performance of the gym, but something that's going to keep us going. But we want a healthy product. We don't just want something that is going to create this performance. We want something that has a long health benefit. So clearly there are some opportunities on the natural area. One other aspect that I'm finding very interesting that is related to this glucose metabolism on the selection of the sweetener or the concentration of sugar or carbohydrate that goes into product. And certainly there is a big market that in the US it seems to be much bigger on this half product. So the same product with half of the sugar. So they're kind of providing this health benefit, still providing the energy from the sugar, but seen as a healthier option. And that use of healthy ingredients, you know, the cheer of this world. We had it with Ginkgo in the previous decades. We always had some of these natural products that come with the scientific background of the country population that use them. The problem is that cynicism and the disbelief on health claim. Until now, there's been too many products making too many claims. So that's something that clearly the industry now has to address. And also other things like the cost of this product. Obviously, development has to go into substantiating this claim, and that will come with premium. And also the medical perception of certain ingredients, like you all know, caffeine, for some reason, that as an Italian I cannot relate to, is also being perceived as not a positive thing. So that is a barrier that needs to be kind of passed. And of course the regulation. The regulation has to be fulfilled. So we can't anymore claim whatever we want. Marketing people has to be kind of retained within the light of the regulation, and the correct science has to back up the claims on the product. And also something very interesting that seems hard to believe in what we've been discussing today, but right or wrong, people believe they are improving their diet so much that they don't need any help anymore. So that is kind of another limitation whereby people feel they don't need this help because they're getting everything they need through the diet. So that's something to look at. So I think for the future, broadening the appeal of this product, so taking products from one category to another is certainly a big issue. But there are barriers. You know, a lot of these drinks are not perceived as natural. And also, yes, that this can have, actually this product can have a benefit to their performance. It's something that consumers believe in. The energy pick-me-up drink, I think this is a really good category, an interesting category to look at. That addresses anyone. For whatever reason, we feel we need more energy for physical or mental performance. We're certainly all interested in that. From children performing at school to, you know, maintaining our brain activity aging is something that we're all interested in. Sport for everyone. Somehow we're getting the message that we need to move and exercise a little bit more. So we don't associate with the athletes, but we still think we do need to take something or an energy drink, even for my walking, to walk a bit further or my cycling. And the growing demand of natural. I think this is something that is around, it's been growing in the last decade. And until we realise that it comes at a premium and there are limitations, something consumers still want. And this is where, again, the coconut water of this world will come into the equation. So I hope this will give you some thoughts, and I'll be able to take some questions. I hope the chair is happy that I've been as fast as I could.